Why, thanks, JP. And yes, you are invited to the program. The number here at the radio station is 903-586-5257. Yesterday evening, I had a conversation with, let's just say, an individual that came to see me as a patient. And without going into great detail, I just want to say that I have a lot of respect for this individual. They're extremely intelligent. But one of the things that I really admire the most is they have good ability to just take a step back, look at the data and the information, and decide for themselves what they want to do. Now, one of the reasons why I'm bringing that up is this individual was telling me, and this person's job is selling vaccines. I think that's probably all I'm going to say about that. But she was telling me, did you know that every doctor that gets an individual to take the COVID-19 vaccination gets $30 from the government? And I said, no, I didn't know that. Now, what I want to do is I want to pose a question to you. Does that mean that a person is self-interested if they know they get $30 as a payment or a fee every time they get a person to take a shot? You tell me, does money change people? Well, you already know the answer to that. But in this conversation, I tell you what, you can really start to build a case that if you want to be healthy, if you want to regain your health, if you want to make improvements, or if you want to maintain the great health that you've already worked so hard for, then it's going to be completely up to you. And so if you're going to practice prevention or healing, the ball is in your court. And so you may have a profession that's completely self-interested. If you want to call it self-dealing or profiteering, I guess you could do that if you wanted to. But then again, you could say that just about anybody. I mean, to try to slightly correct that statement, you have your own attitude that you get to choose. You're going to choose what you believe. You're going to see, what am I going to focus my energy on? Am I going to be positive? Am I going to be negative? Am I going to do things that are going to be absolutely the very best for my health, or am I going to become a victim where I'm just at the mercy of taking drugs for the rest of my life with no chance of improvement? Well, you already know what I want. I want you to be able to make a decision where you can actually help yourself greatly, and then you're the one that benefits, you win, and so does your family also. So we kind of have come to the conclusion this morning in this brief monologue that you got to be your own best health advocate. Nobody can do it for you. And you know what? The thing of it is, you're going to be disappointed many times in your life, but I don't think you ever have a reason to be disappointed when you try to help yourself. That's normally what I tell people when they bring supplements into my office and they show me what they've been taking. My first thought is, oh my word, look at this individual. There may be a lot of supplements there, but what they're doing is they're trying to help themselves. So that's not a crime. That's very, very good. Now, if I can, I kind of got on this kick after reading a few articles about good, healthy fats. And so as I read these studies to you, just let them kind of swirl around your brain and just kind of think about this information. Now, I know I'm specifically starting the topic of the use of fish oils. And so, for example, if you and your brother-in-law are fishing in a dinghy boat in the Arctic Ocean and you catch a codfish, well, guess what that codfish needs in order to keep it from seizing up and becoming frozen? Well, that's called fish oil. So if you're on a Norwegian fishing boat or a vessel and you're trying to harvest as many cod as you can so you can in turn sell the cod for people to eat, which is good for us. And then number two, you're trying to distill the livers of the cod liver so you can extract what some people consider a superfood. That would be cod liver oil. And so here we are. Mothers 100 years ago, they wanted to give their children every advantage toward producing great health. And I know this sounds simple, but if you remove the water from the brain, it's probably literally 50% cholesterol and 50% pure fat. Now, I may be off slightly. I'll have to, like, reread the research on that, but that's fine. But you get the gist of it. And so, what would you say if I told you that these omega-3 fatty acids that come from fish oil play a huge role when it comes to human health? So what I want to do is I want to read a couple studies I looked up this morning. And to me, this is just so interesting. But if you will, just consider the information. If you want to look up the studies, perfect. Okay. This first topic, when it relates to the consumption of fish oils, well, it's going to relate to cancer because that's the chapter I'm looking at. I think the book I'm looking at is The Good and Good Fats and Oils by Jean Barilla, and I like it. And I've talked to her on the phone many times, and I like that she has a heart to provide information for people so they can make great decisions. And so you're no different. Neither am I. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. Of course, that's my example, but we are meant to hear things, and so I want you to hear this morning. In a study at Cornell University, rats were injected with a chemical that was definitely known to cause pancreatic cancer. But when they were fed fish oil as opposed to corn oil, they had far fewer tumors and smaller tumors with fish oil as compared to when their diet was mainly corn oil, which, you know, that's a vegetable oil. I won't go into great detail, but there is no way that you're going to take corn and squeeze it with your hands and get a drop of oil out of it. That doesn't exist. Now, if you put it in a hydraulic press under great pressure and you put a chemical called hexane, which is kind of a almost like gasoline for your car, then yeah, under very high pressure, using a solvent like gasoline, you can start to extract some oil from the corn, which it would never happen otherwise. And so that's what they did was, they fed these rats either fish oil as their primary source of fat, or they gave them corn oil, which if you go into the store and look on the shelf, there's a red heart suggesting it's heart healthy to consume corn oil. And that's probably based on the concept or the idea that it doesn't contain any cholesterol. Just put that on hold. So it says this study provides evidence that fish oils rich in omega-3 fatty acids may have the potential as an inhibitory agent in cancer development. So I kind of said, okay, that's interesting. That's a good way to start. Now listen to this one right here. In a very similar experiment, fish oil again proved to be an effective protector against cancer. Of course, I know you're not a rat, you're not a mouse, but I like the idea that you can say, well, how does this apply to me? I'm a human being. Well, here goes. Doctors J. Jerkowski and W. Cave of St. Mary's Hospital in Rochester, they used a type of fish that's called a menhaden. To me, that sounds like bait if you want to go catch some yellowfin tuna out there off the coast of Louisiana. But they used this small menhaden fish as their main source of EPA or eicosapentaenoic acid. That's just a type of oil that's found in fish oil. And then the other thing they did was they gave these rats a chemical called N-methyl-N-nitrosourea because it's known to cause cancer. Okay, so they know if they inject these rats with that chemical, it's going to cause cancer. Okay, the laboratory rats that were given fish oil from the fish called menhaden, they survived an average of 38% longer than those that were given corn oil. Now, you're not a rat, but you tell me, does that number 38%? If you have 38% greater survivability and longevity when you have cancer, well, is that your ticket to doing the work that God has for you, where you can actually bless your family and be a positive influence and continually press on studying the Word of God, trying to continually study and learn? What a gift right there, 38% longer. Now, get this right here. The laboratory rats given the fish oil, they survived an average of 38% longer. Here's the second point. they had 75% fewer tumors. I thought to myself, you cannot make this stuff up. And number three, the total tumor mass, that's the size of it, it was 80% less compared to those not getting the fish oil. Okay? Now, here's a third study. All animals on their normal diets develop cancer in this study, whereas 37.5% of rats given fish oil, they remain free of cancer. Now, you know I did not say that 100% of the rats remain free of cancer when they were given fish oil. But still, this is pretty significant. If you were a rat and, you know, they gave you a substance to cause cancer, what do you do with the 37.5% of rats that never developed cancer once they were given fish oil? Now, when it said when corn oil was added to the normal diets, there was no significant change, and all of the rats developed cancer. So that means 100% of all rats that receive corn oil as the main oil of their diet, they're going to develop cancer. And so analysis of the relevant tissues confirmed, and this is when they harvested the organs to test them with a pathology or histology, those that had EPA levels were inversely related to tumor development, which means the more fish oil they relied upon in their diet, the less cancer and tumor development. Folks, I'm not trying to be negative at all, but can you tell me, has modern medicine or oncology, have they significantly won the battle against cancer? Well, you already know the answer to that. It's absolutely no. Not much has happened at all. Yes, there may be more potent drugs and chemotherapy, but do you know how many people just literally suffer and waste away into nothingness? I'm not trying to be critical at all. I'm just saying, is there anything that we can do that might actually be a benefit? And so I know you want to help yourself. So, and that's why I'm reading this information to you about the use of fish oil. So just remember that 100 years ago, cod liver oil was considered one of the greatest superfoods of all time. And so let me read another study to you. Doctors H. Gabor and S. Abraham, they fed laboratory mice diets containing 10% of fat from either corn oil or from menhaden fish. So they kind of repeated the experiment that the previous doctors from Rochester did. And, let me just jump down to this. The type of cancer tissue, what they did was, they took basically a mammary adenocarcinoma, which is breast cancer, and they transplanted it to the mice. And what they did was, the tumors were weighed exactly 21 days later. So tumors in mice that were fed fish oil, they were 60% smaller than those that were fed corn oil. So you tell me, does what you eat and put into your body make a huge difference? Absolutely it does. And they said that the smaller tumor weights were due to the increased rate of tumor cell loss, which was 2.5 times greater in mice fed fish oil than those fed corn oil. The researchers conclude that the omega-3 fatty acids contained in the fish oils, they inhibit the stimulation of tumor growth induced by linoleic acid that came from the corn oil. They were saying it's altering prostaglandin synthesis. I know that sounds kind of technical. Well, what would you do? Would you do something that would give you superior protection against development of cancer? Absolutely. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
You're going to have to turn your radio off.
Well?
If you want me to talk to you and not hear all this reverberation, turn the radio off.
I don't have my radio on.
Well, I know. Turn the radio off.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, you don't have it on?
No.
Oh, well, I can hear it on my end. Anyway, go ahead. We'll do the best we can.
That's what I'm saying. I don't have a...
Okay, I'm with you. Well, I thought you might have, and so sorry about that. I just made an assumption. I was wrong. It's just bleeding through the radio here. Well, how can I help you today?
I see. It's not on at all.
Well, how can I help you today?
Well, I was calling about dry throat. I'm having nail issues.
How long have they been going on?
Oh, wow. Probably about...
Well, tell me about your dry throat first. Can you tell me about your dry throat?
Dr. Morgan, I'm hearing two of you, so I'm just going to hang up and call back and hopefully fix the problem.
All right. You know what? That lightning strike did something to the radio station. Okay, let's just kind of tackle this piece by piece. I don't know the reason why the gentleman has a dry throat, but, for example, probably the worst dry throats I've ever seen have been when people have had some type of radiation treatment or some therapy that just damages the tissues and the cells. And so the way that I want to think of this, and just let me kind of give you my take on it. When I was in college, one of the classes or a couple of classes we had to take that I thought was like, it was something else. It was called pathology. I think I took pathology 1 and 2. And also another class I took was called histology. Well, the point that I'm getting to is this. When you would look at normal healthy cells from the back of the throat or from your esophagus, under a microscope, you could look at normal tissue, normal cells. And then we were given slides of tissues that were like abnormal. So they'd either had some damage to them and or they'd had like esophageal cancer, but you could just look at them and tell them, go, okay. What's happened to the human body here? It's just completely broken down. It's not normal. But in my mind, I'm always thinking, okay, well, if I can't change, the circumstances that led to this, what can we do to start to turn this around? And so one of the things that I've experimented with over the years with the giant throat is the use of a substance. It's just a type of cactus that grows naturally, and a lot of people have them as plants. And you know what the thing of it is? If you have an aloe vera plant in your house, it's really doing you a favor. Because one thing that aloe vera does, it filters and purifies toxins from the air to make your house or your home a more healthy environment to live in. So I think you've heard the story that plants like to drink up and consume carbon dioxide, but they give off oxygen. So human beings, what do? We take in oxygen and give off carbon dioxide. So if I were trying to heal a throat without actually knowing what the root cause of the problem is, it'd be really hard not to recommend aloe vera. Now, some people, what they do is they just take a big juicy leaf from their aloe vera plant, break it off, and they just kind of fillet it. Some people will run it through a juicer. Some people will just blend it up. But I'm telling you, that stuff has one of the most vital life forces of all time. And so when I think of aloe vera, I think of what can we do to rejuvenate the human body. And so if you told me that you had horrible acid reflux and you were terrified that you were having a heart problem, if you drank a cup of aloe vera juice and then in 15 minutes you go, I could have been wrong about that. I think that my problem's gone away. It is that... I don't want to use the word miraculous. I started to, forgive me. But it's amazing what aloe vera can do to rejuvenate the body. Now, I know this is a little bit of a side topic right here because the gentleman told me he's got a problem with his nails. Well, I have a very vivid imagination, so I can just say, well, his nails aren't normal. And they can be all sorts of things, but when the liver and the kidney are stressed, that's where we're going to see nails that they don't look like they used to. But aloe vera internally has been shown to rejuvenate. Now, I don't have any scientific studies in front of me to demonstrate this. I'm just telling you my observations. So that may not be as impressive as like a study that actually looks at it with a keen clinical eye. And it's double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover study where nobody knows. They're just trying to be surprised by the results. But anyway... I always think that if somebody's had like ruptured disc in their spine or a bulging disc, or they've had some type of significant fall or injury, then aloe vera is one of the greatest things that you can take. Just like there was a study that I read about a year and a half ago And the reason why this was so significant to me was they were showing that people that had confirmed ruptured or bulging disc, and they did this by doing a type of a diagnostic test called an MRI, and they do such a good job of showing where the disc is bulging. But when these individuals, they took what's called glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate and a substance called MSM, which stands for methyl sulfonylmethane, and what they all have in common is they all have sulfur molecules. But they showed that the disc bulging in the herniated disc would reduce and diminish over about, you know, a year and a half to 2 years. You can't just take glucosamine sulfate and expect it to be completely healed in like 1 day or 1 nanosecond. No, that doesn't happen. It's going to be time and patience and consistency in taking those supplements. But you know, another point that I'd make is most people, they do not do a good job aging when it comes to their joints. And so I'm not trying to be critical. I'm certainly not making fun of anybody. But if you go to the grocery store today or go to a store of some kind to shop because it's your day off and this is when you get groceries, you're going to see a lot of people that are just limping horribly. And most people can kind of tell where it's come from. They can tell if they're really favoring like a hip joint. And, you know, for all I know, when they're limping badly like that, maybe the joint is past the point of no return and they actually need some type of hip replacement surgery. That may be true. But you can also tell the way that some people walk that they're really favoring a foot or an ankle. Or maybe it's a knee. But these are all weight-bearing joints, and you're not going to make it a long time if you can't use your joints. And so, excuse me, investing in your joints with something like glucosamine sulfate or chondroitin sulfate or MSM is a really, really good call. So what you're doing is you're saying, what can I do to help feed and nourish these joints so I can be in a much better place? And so, let me see, where was I going with that? Dry throat and nails. I'm sorry I couldn't get more information, but I'm kind of an information junkie. And so I always want you to remember, when you go to a doctor or you go to somebody like me, when you give details and information, oh my goodness, I just eat that stuff up. I always like it when somebody brings their lab test in, because I'll take any advantage to help understand what's not working right or why their body's not functioning the way they're supposed to. And so that's where nutrition comes in. You can't really rebuild or repair anything with drugs alone. They're not designed to do that. They don't repair anything. I mean, that may not be 100% true. If you had double pneumonia and you're about to die, then you need an antibiotic. You really do. And that's what they're for. So if you have an emergency and you can't breathe and your oxygen's low, besides them giving you fluids or giving you oxygen, you may actually require an antibiotic to get to the root cause of the infection that you have in your lungs. So under those circumstances, I would say, yeah, that drug might play a role in being a cure for the disease that you have. It's called pneumonia. But outside that, you could probably tell me any other drug, whether it's a diabetes medication or a blood pressure medication. I don't know that they fix anything. I wish they did. You know, when I was in school, I took several pharmacology courses, and they were taught by pharmacists, and I had a lot of respect for them. But they would always say two things over and over. I know they weren't just talking to me, but, you know, the entire student body. I think that we had like about 67, 68 students in my class or the trimester that I was in. But they would say, number one, you want to use what's called the minimum effective dose. And that means you use the least amount of a pharmaceutical drug or medication to help manage a problem. But they would also stress another point, and I don't hear this a lot anymore, but I used to back in the 80s. And what they would say is, they would say, you got to understand, Roy, the purpose of drugs is to help take care of a problem while the person is trying to get their life back in order. So if they can correct their diet, if they can change their lifestyle, and let me just give you an example. If somebody is super, super sedentary and they're not really used to moving, it's going to be really, really hard to improve their health, because what happens is when you're sedentary, you just do not get enough oxygen and blood and nutrients. And you also don't have enough detoxification. So a lot of times, the people that are having the roughest go with their health, they usually have some of the lowest oxygen levels. And so how do you counter that? Well, if you can convince yourself that you need to start walking, and actually walking is wonderful, or maybe another different form of exercise. But if you start walking, what you're doing is you're greatly training your body to increase its delivery of oxygen and nutrients, and also to wash and carry off waste that's just normal waste that builds up because you're, you know, living and breathing. Does that make sense? Okay. Well, I'll tell JP that there's too much reverberation coming through, and so we'll work on that. So here's what I want to cover next. And what I want to do is I want to stay on the topic of using fish oil, because I want to at least know that I did my job at explaining to you how beneficial this stuff is. And so those articles I just read about cancer, oh my goodness. If you take the rats that they gave fish oil to, their tumors began to die and shrink. Now, are you okay with that? Oh my word, of course you're okay with that. Anything that helps contribute to cancer cells dying and shrinking, that might be a pretty good play, especially if it's not toxic. And fish oil is definitely not toxic. Okay, okay, here's one right here. You know that high blood pressure is called the silent killer. And the reason why they call it the silent killer is your blood pressure could be elevated for like 20 years, and you know what? You might not even really know that's a problem. But when it's elevated like that, well, number one, it's going to literally wear your kidneys out. You cannot outlive the kidneys. You need your kidneys to be in great working order for the rest of your life. I saw a woman this week that was 80 years of age. All her kidney numbers were fabulous. And so I've got confidence in her. She's going to do great. Okay, so here is a research study. I may kind of botch it slightly because I forgot where the reference was, but I've got the abstract ready here, so maybe that counts. What they did is they studied 14 patients that had moderately high blood pressure, so they were diagnosed with essential hypertension. And what they did was, and I know this doesn't sound like very much, but they put them on a diet. This was in July, well, it doesn't say what day, but it's 1985. And all they did was they gave them mackerel to eat. Mackerel is an ocean fish, and they tried to make sure there were 2.2 grams of EPA, which is eicosapentaenoic acid. So you could probably look on your fish oil bottle and find out how much EPA is in here. But in this study, 2.2 grams of EPA. And so when they put them on this mackerel diet, I'm trying to see how long it was for. I want to say it was for 2 months. No, I'm sorry, here it is right here. 3 months. Sorry about that. That it lowered the systolic blood pressure by 10%. And they went on to say, which I like this, whenever the subjects got off the fish oil and they just went back to the standard typical diet, their blood pressure increased again. So what would 10% look like for you? So if you check your blood pressure this morning and it's 150, I'm just saying that to make it simple, over like 95, if your blood pressure lowered by 10%, well, that'd be 15 points lower on the top number. So instead of it being 150, it might be 135. Now, would that make you feel better about your blood pressure if the top number was 135 instead of 150? Of course it would. But they accomplished this just by giving fish oil. Let me see, where's another good one that I thought I found this morning? I try to like select the ones that I think sound pretty good. Okay. You know as well as I do that there's such an intense focus when you enter the doctor's office, and I'm not saying it has to be a bias, but you know, you're smart, you can figure it out. So when you go to a doctor these days, what are the two things they're going to hit you with right off the bat? Number one, have you been vaccinated? Now, they don't give full disclosure and tell you they receive $30 from the government every time they get the shot. Now, I really don't know that to be true, so if somebody calls me and corrects me on that, I'll say, okay, I'm sorry, I was wrong. But that's what I'm hearing straight from the people that sell vaccines for a living. And so why would they lie to me? And if that's wrong, I will correct it. And I'm just kind of, if you want to call it hearsay, well, I haven't seen a paycheck go to, anyway, let's drop the topic. But the other thing that people are hit up with all the time is there seems to be such an intense focus on the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs. And those are pushed so aggressively. And, you know, yesterday I heard a woman make a comment. She said, you know what, there's a condition called rhabdomyolysis. And I thought, hey, this woman is pretty smart. And she said, when both my parents took the cholesterol-lowering drugs, it caused so much pain in their chest and so much pain in their legs because they quickly developed a condition called rhabdomyolysis. And what that means is when you give a statin drug to lower cholesterol, and I think she said in her parents' case, this was a one called Zocor. So I'm not trying to pick on one drug or the other. It's just the way it is. But what it does is when you consume a cholesterol-lowering drug, it has great potential to cause your skeletal muscles, that means the muscles in your arms and your legs and your back and your feet and your hands and chest, wherever you want to say, they start to break down. And when they start to break down, they look like, you look at them under a microscope, and rhabdomyolysis is when your muscles actually start to shred and break down and they get into the bloodstream. Well, you tell me, are your muscle fibers, do they belong in your bloodstream? Of course they don't. So what they do is they create a log jam and they generate inflammation. You do not want dead, decomposing strands of your muscle in your bloodstream. So we were just talking about, well, what do we do about this? And so let me kind of give you a different take on this. One bit of research I came across came from what's called the Harris-Conner Group. And what they did, which I think this is interesting right here, you know, the typical standard American diet has an incredible amount of carbohydrates in it. Of course you do. I think it's pretty easy to say that just about every fast food restaurant on the planet, they're serving up carbohydrates big time. If you want to say that comes from potatoes or french fries or wheat or grains or sugar in this drink and sugar in that drink, well, you'd be right. And so the Harris-Conner Group, what they wanted to do was they wanted to examine the effect of fish oil on people that had high carbohydrate diets, which I'd say that would be the vast majority of all Americans. And so what these diets do is they notice that the more carbohydrates a person is on, it really does increase blood levels of what's called VLDL. Those are very low density lipoproteins. And so the two things that always go up when you consume more carbs or more sugar or starch than what you can handle is one of the blood markers on your lipid profile. It's called VLDL. And as a general rule, when that number or the VLDL hits 21 or above, and I know I'm just oversimplifying it, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt, then what happens is if your VLDL on your lab test is 21 or above, that's a pretty good indication that you got plaque forming in your arteries at a much faster rate than what your body can do to remove it or scrub it clean or get rid of it. Does that make sense? Now, Dr. Linus Pauling, he did a ton of research on this, and I know this is a slight detour, but what he would do is he would give vitamin C to people, and he would notice that the VLDL would come down. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? He's really right about that. The more carbohydrates that a person consumes throughout the day, the more they become depleted probably of magnesium, B vitamins, zinc, vitamin C, stuff like that. But in the study from the Harris-Conner Group, where they just looked at the effects of giving the people fish oil, they were eating a lot of carbs, they noticed that when you eat a lot of carbohydrates, the triglyceride level always goes up. Not always, but it significantly goes up. So, and I don't know if you know this or not, but when your triglyceride levels are 200 or above, it's one of the greatest predictors of all time if somebody's heading toward a stroke. You know, where an artery either splits open and breaks because it's under great undue pressure, or they have a clot. There's two types of strokes, ischemic or the vascular, where they split open. Anyway, so here's how the study went. So the studies compared the effects of fish oil and then plant oil, and a lot of times when it's plant oil, it's going to be corn oil. In this study, though, they used peanut oil and cocoa butter. They didn't use corn oil. And they found that the blood levels of your very low-density lipoprotein and triglycerides in healthy persons eating a high-carbohydrate diet. So the healthy volunteers were placed on a diet that was exactly 45% carbohydrates and 45% fat for a period of time to establish baseline measurements. Next, they were placed on a 75% carbohydrate. If that's not a lot of sugar, I don't know what is. Which 15% of their fat consisted of peanut oil and cocoa butter, which I don't know really which one tastes better, but, you know, some of the fast food restaurants, they use peanut oil. So after a period of time, the plant fats, which in this case was peanut and cocoa oil, they were replaced with fish oils, which the remainder of the diet was unchanged, which they stayed on high carbohydrates. So when the volunteers consumed the high carbohydrate or high sugar diet without fish oils, here's what happened. Their blood levels of triglycerides rose an average of 85%. That's huge. While their VLDL doubled, and so between triglycerides and VLDL, when those go up in your body, that ain't good. That means you're at high risk for heart disease and stuff like that. But when they switched to high carbohydrate diet with fish oil, I know this is going to sound crazy, their blood level of triglyceride, they dropped from elevated level to a level that was even lower than the baseline. That's amazing. The next thing is, the ones that took the fish oil, even though they were on a high carbohydrate diet, their average VLDL, that stands for very low density lipoprotein, it dropped by 78%. And their cholesterol levels, the total cholesterol, dropped 65% to below baseline. Folks, I can't make this up. Now, I don't have the article right in front of me because I got a stack of papers here and I just lost it a while ago. But let me just tell you what it says. When they examine what a good amount of fish oil to take would be, so if you go to the store and you buy cod liver oil, and let me cover this topic first. I'm going to make it sound really simple, but what you want to do is you're trying to figure out if the fish oil that you're using is really, really good or if it's rancid and toxic. I need you to raise your hand right now if you really like burping up fish oil and tasting rotten fish all day long. Nobody's raising their hand. Okay. And so one of the ways to determine if your fish oil is good, and there's a couple of ways, and I'm not trying to tell you these are scientific, but if you had fish oil and you put the bottle of it in the freezer, like it's in a gel cap, if it still remains relatively clear when it's been frozen overnight, then you know that it's pretty good stuff. It has got antifreeze in it. That's what keeps cod fish from freezing to death in the Arctic Ocean, is their omega-3 fatty acids. But if you put a fish oil, a bottle of fish oil gel caps in the freezer, and when you look at it the next day, it looks like white, milky stuff that's frozen solid, most likely that's either not fish oil, and I know this may be a shock to you, but sometimes people sell products that are much cheaper than what they're saying they're selling in order to make more money and profit. You've probably never heard the idea that the love of money is the root of all evil, have you? I know, I'm being sarcastic. And so if it doesn't freeze, then that's a good sign. Number next. If you took a drop of fish oil and you put it on, say, a piece of styrofoam overnight, if the fish oil seems to eat into the styrofoam, then it's bad. But if the drop of fish oil just stays in a suspension on top of the styrofoam, then you know it's really, really good stuff. But as a general rule, if you consume rancid fish oil, which is not hard to come by, unfortunately, then you're going to be burping and belching it. So obviously, we're trying to find a really clean source of fish oil. The one that I probably use the most of comes from Standard Process, but I like it for several reasons. Number one, when they harvest it, it tests to have no mercury whatsoever in it, which I appreciate them testing it. But also, they use what's called a light clay medium to filter it. So even they're trying to remove, I'm just joking as I say this, you know, scales and gills and other parts from the fish. I'm just joking. But they use a light clay medium. But what that does is, while it may remove, does a good job of removing impurities from the fish oil, it still allows all the vitamin A and all the vitamin D from the cod liver oil to pass through. So what you get is you get a fish oil that's very nutritionally dense. And in under these circumstances, yes, it's a superfood. It really, really is. And I haven't gotten to it yet, but you talk about amazing for the function of the brain. Okay, here's another one. In 1985, members of this research group reported that fish oils produce dramatic drops in blood triglyceride levels in patients that had highly elevated levels of these fats. And so you tell me, when's the last time that you've been to a doctor or a nurse practitioner or a nurse or physician's assistant, and they said, ma'am or sir, you've got high triglycerides, we want to put you on this drug called fenofibrate or gemfibrozole, which I hate those drugs. That's only my opinion, but I've seen so many people die that took drugs to lower triglycerides. They're so toxic to the body, but you don't have to take my word for it. You can look it up and study it for yourself. But drugs, every single one of them has a side effect. When it comes to fish oil, does it have a side effect? Yeah, it improves your health. How about that? And actually, the studies show that if you took about 4 gel caps a day of the fish oil, and I like it in the gel cap form because what they do is they seal it in and they're trying to prevent it from oxidizing or spoiling or turning bad. But at about 4 a day, it's been shown to increase a person's longevity and lifespan by almost 5 years. It's literally phenomenal. So, you know, when I grew up, my father smoked cigarettes. And I would say 2 packs of cigarettes a day was probably the norm for him. There's really no telling how much secondhand smoke I have consumed in my lifetime, but I'm so glad I don't do that now. I'm not judging somebody for smoking cigarettes, but you're going to take years of, you know, a beautiful life off your life when you smoke cigarettes. And I think the studies show that if you smoke 1 pack a day for 20 years, that usually shortens your lifespan by about 5 years, just about. I think if it's at 2 packs of cigarettes a day, it's just a little over 7 years it takes off your lifespan. So it didn't take a genius to figure out that when you smoke cigarettes, you're taking your life away from you. Now you tell me, God made you, He's your creator, He made you with a purpose for good works, right? And so whether you're the matriarch or your family or you're the patriarch or you're even like a young person, you were designed for good works. And so you got to come to terms with, what do I do to preserve the health of my body so I can be exactly the person I'm supposed to be? I was kind of joking with a lady yesterday, but I sent her a text saying we need to do a jailbreak to get your husband out of the hospital so we can start doing stuff to rejuvenate him. Okay, here we go, number next. A study from Karlovy University in Prague, Czechoslovakia, they also showed that when you took fish oils, it greatly reduced high triglycerides. Men that had elevated blood triglyceride levels who were given about 18 ounces of fish a day for 3 months, that may not sound appealing to you, but that's just a little over a pound a day, they had huge reductions in triglyceride levels, and they also showed great improvements in the HDL cholesterol. So as a general rule, when the HDL cholesterol gets closer to the number 60, that's when it seems to do a great job of removing plaque and debris and gunk from your arteries. And so what you're wanting is, you're wanting something that improves the suppleness and the flexibility of your arteries, right? Absolutely correct. Okay. If you want to try to call me, I'll try again, but I cannot guarantee that you won't hear reverberation. But you know what's going to happen? If I can't have a conversation, it's not going to work, but we'll try, okay? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
But there's no way that you could have the
good morning
experience.
Yeah, I can hear myself in the background right now, so something's wrong. Well, how can I help you?
Hit a radio again, sir.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're going to have to figure this out. Thanks for your great patience and understanding, but yeah, I can hear the radio in the background from the radio station, not you.
I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Have a good day, buddy. Bye. Okay. You know what? This is just the way that life is. If something doesn't go the way that you want, we have to adapt to it. It's not going to do any good to complain. But I think, you know, this will get fixed at some point, and I'll be able to take more phone calls, which I always love doing. That makes my job so easy. Okay, since nobody wants to call and ask me a question, I just get to keep talking, right? I came across a study from Dr. Kenneth Radick of the University of Cincinnati School of Medicine. And what he suggests is that even low doses of fish oil every day greatly reduces the risk of a heart attack. Now, we're told over and over again that if you want to prevent a heart attack, taking a statin drug is a way to do it. But I'm thinking to myself, is that really true? Are they being honest with us? And you could say the same about me. You could say, Dr. Morgan, I don't know if I could believe you. But Dr. Radick believes that either the cod liver oil affects cholesterol levels or it inhibits the formation of blood clots, which can precipitate a heart attack. And so he did a study. 10 volunteers, and I know this is a lot, they were given 6 capsules of fish oil daily. And 7 people in the study, they received 3 capsules of fish oil every day. And 8 people in this study, they were only given olive oil. So one group received 6 capsules of fish oil, another group received 3 capsules, and the third group, they just had capsules filled with olive oil, which technically olive oil is awesome stuff. Okay? So I don't know that I'm worried about that causing a problem. So olive oil, that is not the same as peanut oil or corn oil or soybean oil. Those are probably rancid toxic oils. And so here's what they were looking at here. They gave them these oils, and the researchers, they were especially concerned about blood levels of a substance called fibrinogen. Now, that's a protein that relates to your blood becoming very sticky and very thick and gooey, and it clots. And so as fibrinogen levels go up, that usually tells us or paints a picture that you got a whole lot more inflammation in your blood. And you know what? Nobody needs to be swimming in an ocean of inflammation in their bloodstream. You know, you want the inflammation to be gone. And so the only thing they looked at was fibrinogen levels, in which technically fibrinogen is a very powerful marker to look at to see if you're at risk for either heart disease or a stroke or high blood pressure, diabetes, that sort of thing, or clots. And so after 20 weeks of this regimen, fibrinogen levels dropped 21.6% in those receiving 6 fish oil capsules a day. It also dropped about 5.8%. It's not as great as those that had 6 capsules. And there was no change in olive oil group. And so Dr. Radick, this comes from the Annals of Internal Medicine, November 1989. So it was published in a really fabulous medical journal. But Dr. Radick says such reductions could have potential at lowering the risk for cardiovascular disease. And so this is just a simple idea. Would you like to do something for yourself that would help protect you and prevent you from having problems? Well, of course you would. There's nobody that wants to have a heart attack. And maybe I could say it this way. You cannot afford to have a heart attack. A gentleman told me this week he spent one day in the hospital and the bill was $23,500. Well, You know what? The number one reason why people would declare bankruptcy from their middle 50s on is because they have medical bills that there's no way on God's green earth that they can afford to pay them. And so I'm not trying to criticize that. I'm just saying the better option that you have is, you know what, become your own best advocate. Do your own research. You know what? I love it when people are curious. If they bring me studies and articles, I think that's great. That means they're trying. So you're never going to have me criticize you. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to say, hey, I'm the doctor here. Don't you tell me about that. I'll tell you how the cow eats the cabbage. Heck no. I want you to be your own best advocate and steward. Now, yes, it is my job to be very precise when somebody comes to see me and figure out what is the area of the greatest weakness they have, or what is our focus here, what's at the root cause of the problem. Because if I can do that, then I can start nudging them in a direction that's going to lead to healing. And of course, not everybody likes everything that I say. I had a woman come to see me recently, and I'm going to tell you, this is sort of a semi-failure case, if you want to say that, but I still think we can learn from this. The woman was about 189 pounds, and she was about 5'2", and she's had quite a few kids. And so she was having all these issues with her blood lipids and her triglycerides and other problems, which is probably, you're saying, yeah, I guess so. But she's saying, you know what, I really need to turn my health around, and I'm in a situation right now where I actually have a really good opportunity. And so here's what I'd ask her to do. I said, okay, one of the problems that you have is that your insulin levels are just way, way too high, and she's just basically almost a diabetic. And I said, if you only eat two meals a day in about a 6 to 7 hour window, when you're not eating for like 16 to 18 hours a day, you're greatly helping your insulin levels to become lower and lower and lower. And then in turn, you get all the benefits from it. And so as I was talking to her, she said, but I don't like that. I like three meals a day because I feel bad if I don't eat breakfast. And I'm going, well, no, I understand that. But you're going to have to give your body a chance to develop if you want to win with this. And so if you do not eat breakfast and you skip breakfast, then what your body's going to do, it's going to say, oh my goodness, I guess she's decided to stop feeding us. What are we going to do? And so your immune system and your body and the hormone levels will adjust and change and adapt where your body starts eating you for breakfast. I promise you, that's what you want when you have extra weight and you have high levels of cholesterol and blood lipids. And so the other thing that I told her to do, I said, you know, this is free. Don't know if you want to do it or not. But if you were to walk twice a day, like morning and evening, what you're really doing is you're trying to retrain your body to handle insulin and glucose and blood sugar and fat. So one of the simplest ways that I know of to reset your insulin receptor sites is just to walk twice a day. So movement and walking is just so critical. If you can't walk, then go on Amazon.com or any other website and purchase those stationary bike pedals and just start pedaling while you're sitting on the couch. You know, we just have to find a starting point. So the very first month this lady tried this, she really didn't like it. You know, I'm just being honest with you. I don't think she would say anything different if I was interviewing her right now on the radio. And she said, you know what, I haven't seen any results. And I said, well, did you walk twice today? And she says, no. And I said, well, did you do the feeding window of just 6 to 7 hours to try to lower your insulin? She said, no, I didn't do that either. And I said, well, what do you want to do now? And she said, you know what, I need to see some results. And so she decided that she would walk twice a day and do the feeding window of 6 to 7 hours, which means she never ate anything after the 7 hour window. Does that make sense? Would you care to guess what the results are? Well, the next month, she had actually lost 23 pounds. Now, I'm not trying to say that all 23 pounds was pure fat. I'm certain that much of that was water. But she was so pleased because she could tell that her blood pressure had gone down. Her body was like flipping switches saying, all right, now we're ready to eat you. And so by skipping breakfast and walking twice a day, what she did was she changed the circumstances of her body, and she's helping her body heal itself. Now, that's great. I'm so proud of her. But you know what? It's always the individual they have to decide what they're willing to do, and they have to adjust their attitude. And you know what? Attitude is everything. I mean, I could tell you right now, if you asked me, Roy, are you extremely grateful to God for being alive? I'm going to say, oh my word, yes. I am so thankful. I am so grateful to God. He's carried me through some difficulties recently, and I'm just filled with love and joy and peace on the inside. Now, that may sound kind of funny, but you're not going to make it really far in this world by complaining at everything and saying you don't like this and don't like that. What I'm going to encourage you to do is, what is the most positive thing that we can do to start the process of turning your health around where it's improved for the better? And you know what? There's probably people listening right now, their health is just phenomenal and fabulous. And you know what? That's going to be a direct byproduct of them really, really doing a lot of things right, making some good choices, and they probably have a great attitude. So that's kind of who I want to model and be like. And so we're living under very difficult circumstances. We're living on a fallen planet. There's toxins at every turn. And so we're driving high-maintenance vehicles here. And that means you're really going to have to expend some energy, and it may be doing things you don't want to do, like walking twice a day. But if you have diabetes, what would be a better plan? I mean, is your health magically going to improve by taking slow-acting insulin and fast-acting insulin and long-acting insulin and a boatload of metformin and gemfibrozole, and you could just keep going and going and going? But none of those, to the best of my knowledge, cure diabetes. But you know what would cure diabetes? Yeah, giving your body a vacation from all the carbohydrates. I know, nobody else is probably going to tell you this, but I am. If you could just go back to eating a diet of real food, and that could be very simply just meat and vegetables. What if you had a hamburger? Actually, here's my fantasy world right here. What if you had a plate of liver and onions in front of you? Is that going to do anything to make your diabetes worse? Well, depending on who you talk to, they would say, oh my goodness, never do that. That's got fat in it. That's going to make you gain weight. Are you kidding me? They don't even know what they're talking about. You want to rejuvenate the body? Give the body something real that it can use to rebuild cells and tissues. Liver may end up being one of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. So if you had liver and onions, well, you know what you're doing. You're voting to improve your health. Yeah, not everybody likes it. I love the stuff, though. I could eat it every week, especially if it's made by Judy. Thanks, Judy. But you've got to put food in your body. You got to eat something anyway. This whole idea that you could just live off the sunshine, baloney, that ain't going to work. You've got to have, your body's made of amino acids, fatty acids, and water. If you don't consume those things, what do you think is going to happen? Well, you know the answer to that. Not going to go real far. Well, what happened to all the... No, that's a negative statement. I'm not going to say that. I was going to talk about those that were in concentration camps and death. Well, they just waste away into nothingness when they don't get food. So if you focus more on a meat and vegetable-based diet, kind of, if you want to call it a keto diet or maybe a modified paleo diet or carnivore diet, I have no problem with that. But the issue is, what are we going to do to lower insulin levels so you can have great longevity and you could actually function at a very high level and not have to experience all these diseases? Well, and I'm so sorry for the inconvenience that it didn't work out today on taking the phone calls, but I'll leave a message with John Paul and see if he can't have the engineer solve that mystery. But you're listening to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I'm so grateful that you could join me this morning, and Lord willing, I'll be back this time next Saturday morning.